The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Abraham Donko. In the headlines, 12 banks withdraw letters of credit to bulk oil distribution companies. Actress Yvonne Nelson leads vigil against energy crisis. GJA worried over total disregard for journalistic values by media houses. 2 UN peacekeepers killed in Congo. And U.S. announces $20 million offer for information leading to the arrest of 4 IS militants. 12 major commercial banks in the country have decided not to issue letters of credit to bulk oil distribution companies as a result of the huge debts the BDCs owe the financial institutions. A similar incident occurred in July last year when 7 out of 10 key banks withdrew their financing of petroleum product purchase, which led to acute shortage of fuel. They, however, resumed the issuance of the letters of credit after government made payment of $150 million directly to the banks as part of payment of its indebtedness to the BDCs. According to the chief executive officer of the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors, Senu Hussey, the situation is frustrating because it is becoming increasingly difficult for members to raise letters of credit to import petroleum products to serve the market. This was confirmed in an interview with a senior banking source. The source indicated that the current situation has become precarious and could possibly crash the entire banking sector. A deputy minister of power, John Jinapo, says government is determined to deal with the energy crisis to the admiration of Ghanaians. Speaking at a scaling up renewable energy program in Accra, Mr. Jinapo said government is also committed towards renewable energy, which it is translating into action in order to support the energy sector for development. Here's a report by Jonathan Thompson and Peace Cluche.
Mr. Jinapo said government has set renewable energy capacity caps to contribute to the 2020 national goals. He said the Power Ministry has also established the necessary regulatory and legal framework, including the Renewable Energy Act 2011, Act 832, and key provisions such as the Renewable Energy Purchase Obligation. Mr. Jinapo said the ministry, with support from the World Bank, is working fervently with the Public Utility Regulatory Commission, PURC, and the Energy Commission to develop the regulatory framework for mini-grids and stand-alone electrification interventions. The Deputy Director for Renewable Grid Electricity and National Focal Person for Scaling Up Renewable Energy Program, SREP, said Mahu, said the renewables are to make life more comfortable for households that are in deprived areas. According to him, SREP wants to use renewable energy to reduce the input of power supplies at homes, offices, and SMEs, adding that this will help cut on laying off workers.
The main motive for doing this is to demonstrate that we can overcome the barriers that are limiting the development of renewable energy. By that, we want to demonstrate some pilot projects such as mini grids, standalone systems for households that are in very deprived communities like the island communities, the lakeside communities that the national grid cannot be extended to. We also want to pilot one utility scale project. So far, if you look at the number of licenses that we have issued to developers for renewable energy development, we've done close to 30, and none of this has actually taken off because the developers keep requesting for a number of securities before they go into the development of their projects. And that will put some burden on us as government. So what we want to do is to explore the option of using project finance, that is bringing in debt and equity from the private sector and from development banks, including some of our local banks, to be able to support some of these projects to take off.
That was the Deputy Director for Renewable Grid Electricity, Chef Mahu, ending that report by Jonathan Thompson and Peace Cluche. Dr. Charles Aka of the Institute of Statistical, Social and Economic Research, ISE, says effective regulation of the banking industry is what will make the banks competitive. This will enable them to reduce their interest rates, leading to low cost of doing business in the country. Dr. Akar said this at a forum organized by the Ministry of Trade and Industry and IEA on the high cost of credit in the country. Joyce Jechi has more.
The cost of credit in the country is said to be the highest in Africa. This is a major problem which stifles investment and economic growth. It also increases the cost of production, which is passed on to consumers in the form of high prices of goods and services. The Institute of Economic Affairs, IEA, has undertaken extensive research on the subject. Factors cited as causing the problem include competitive government borrowing, high costs in the banking industry, macroeconomic instability, and monetary policy. Dr. Charles Akar says the setting up of a financial services authority will help in regulating the banks.
They are looking at checking and investigate whether these banks are doing something untoward, whether they are actually colluding, whether they have become a cartel, whether the MDs of these banks are meeting to charge the same interest rate. For example, if you go to Makola, you want to buy something, you can move from this seller and it's charging 2. You go to another seller, 1 to 80%. That's what you should have been seeing in a competitive market. But where all the banks are charging almost the same high interest rate of, say, 28%, and that will immediately draw the attention of the financial service authority, and they'll go and investigate. And when they investigate, they'll be able to call them to court and say, you need to justify why you are making such huge profit, and it works to bring competition.
You also talked about how financial services authority helps consumers.
Sometimes somebody put 10,000 cedis in a bank and the bank is charging fees, 100 cedis every month, and you know where to go. If there is a financial service authority, say no, when I got my statement, I saw that my bank has taken 100 Ghana cedis. I don't know the reason why, and they immediately go and investigate. And if the bank deducted that money unlawfully, they are unable to justify it, they'll punish them with a fee, and the account holder can get some reimbursement.
The Minister of Trade and Industry, Dr. Sri Gabra, acknowledged the concerns of industries and Ghanaians on the high cost of credit, saying that the government, being the largest borrower, also feels the impact.
While our country has been quite successful compared to other countries in attracting foreign direct investment, even that trajectory could be affected unless the foreign direct investors are bringing mostly the low interest rate capital from their own countries, rather than in some cases dipping into Ghana's capital markets for sourcing of funds for their projects.
A renowned economist, Dr. Kwame Pienim, asked the government to get a steady microeconomic good management in order to contribute to domestic savings. He said this way, the cost of borrowing will reduce.
George Jetcha reporting. The tax policy advisor, Dr. Edward Labissian, has emphasized that the exchange of information is the only way to eliminate tax evasion, especially by multinational companies. He was speaking at a seminar organized in Accra by the Ghana Revenue Authority for its members in collaboration with international partner Global Forum on Tax Transparency. Dr. Labissian said that continuous confinement of information on tax administration within the country's borders without soliciting advice from international partners will not only increase tax evasion, but will hinder enforcement of tax laws. Dr. Labissian added that though exchange of information is key, it must also be done in a manner not to hinder individuals and businesses' decision to invest in or outside the country. Yvonne Atilegu has more.
Dr. Labissian said exchange of information will help bridge the vast differences in the tax structure and tax administration among jurisdictions, adding that if this is not done, Ghana and Africa as a whole will continue to lose billions of dollars annually to tax evasion.
The OECD exchange of information standards can alert the Ghana Revenue Authority to tax evasion and offshore wealth that was previously unknown and unknowable. Again, the standards have the tendency to deter tax evasion and encourage timely compliance by taxpayers. It is also essential that a robust and effective system of administrative cooperation and exchange of information is developed in the country. The Ministry of Finance will continue to provide the needed support for the implementation of the exchange of information.
The Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority, George Blankson, said the GRA has already taken a step in this direction. This is why it has joined the Global Forum on Tax Transparency, which is assisting with skills and resources to help overcome tax evasion.
A lot of business entities within Ghana engage in transactions that go beyond the borders of Ghana. So if you want to assess truly the tax liabilities that any individual business entity must pay, you must look beyond the borders of Ghana to be able to do proper assessment and true assessment of the business. business entities' tax liabilities. And this requires obtaining information from other jurisdictions. But without double taxation agreement and without signing on to exchange of information treaties with other countries, you cannot have access to this information.
Mr. Blankson was hopeful that the seminar will not only enhance effective exchange of information across borders, but will train auditors of the GRA who will in turn use the knowledge to mobilize revenue for national development. The head of the Global Forum on Tax Transparency, Monica Batty, explains further why the exchange of information should be adopted by auditors.
The world has come together and come to the firm conclusion that information is the right tool, and the level playing field means that the tax auditors the world over also have all the information they need to carry out their tax audits, not only domestically, but the information that is held outside.
You heard the head of Global Forum on Tax Transparency, Monica Batty, ending that report by Yvonne Atilago. Social and cultural barriers are the cause of ineffective gender participation in rural agricultural production. This is because access to land and capital for production are limited to women who venture into agriculture as compared to their male counterparts. This came up at a National Consultative Agriculture Investments Gender and Land Seminar in Accra. Participants called for the removal of impediments in rural agriculture to promote equitable and inclusive agriculture investment to stimulate growth. Here's a report by Yahya Kwamwa and Priscilla Anumnoy.
The agricultural sector has been identified as one of the pillars for promoting pro-poor and inclusive growth. The Deputy Minister of Food and Agriculture in charge of crops, Dr. Al-Hassan Yakubu, said enhancing private sector competitiveness by promoting investment in commercial farming and outgrower scheme is seen as a key strategy for stimulating inclusive economic growth. He said government is currently assisting investors in scaling up inclusive business models that improve farmers' and businesses' commercial potential. Dr. Yakubu indicated that the priority of government is to ensure food security and reduce poverty levels among the people.
Investments need to be attentive to existing social differences in rural societies, including those based on gender, age, and ethnicity. There is ample evidence from research that agricultural investments conducted under various business models can have differentiated implications on various groups of the affected population, including women and men. In fact, women, due to the existing structural gender inequalities in access to land and control over key assets, most notably land and decision-making, are generally disadvantaged in terms of access to wage labor and contract farming opportunities, participation in consultations around land, compensation schemes, etc. Access to technology by women is often forgotten in the discourse of the gender gap in agriculture. As technology gets more privatized, it is important that we include access to technology in our discussion.
The FAO representative in Ghana, Dr. Lamudia Tumbianu, said the organization is ready to assist in formulating and implementing actions that will foster partnerships among relevant sectors towards equitable gender agricultural investment.
The existing regulation, how we can improve the policies, and how we can take finance and gender issue in project and program implementation for agricultural production. In the case of FAO, we pay attention to gender issue, basically because having, for instance, women having access to land and productive factor, it can increase the yield by 30%.
The program was organized by the FAO in partnership with the Center for Gender Studies and Advocacy of the University of Ghana and Ministry of Food and Agriculture.
A report by Yahya Kwamwa and Priscilla Anumnoy. Ghanaian actress Yvonne Nelson has officially announced her intention to lead a vigil dubbed Doom So Must Stop. The vigil is to draw the attention of President Mahama to the current energy crisis, and it is scheduled for the 16th of this month. The actress announced the event on her official Facebook page by posting a letter addressed to the Accra Regional Police Commander. The letter is jointly signed by her lawyers Nana Kwesi Wua and Kofi Bento, who also act as lawyers for award-winning musician Michael Owusu-Addo, popularly known as Sarkodie. The letter said, as citizens of this great country, Yvonne and Sarko, they consider it their civic duty to God and country to walk the talk by embarking on a peaceful vigil in order to drive home the message of the hardship Ghanaians are going through as a result of the energy crisis. It said the converging point of the event is the stadium grounds of the University of Ghana, Legon. The letter also stated that the Dunsoma stop vigil is strictly non-partisan. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, the major stories. Toll banks withdraw letters of credit to bulk oil distribution companies. Actress Yvonne Nelson leads vigil against energy crisis. GGA worried over total disregard for journalistic values by media houses. Two UN peacekeepers killed in Congo. U.S. announces $20 million offer for information leading to arrest of four IS militants. Please stay with us. Welcome back. The GGA says it is overly worried about the blatant disregard for ethical values in sections of the media. The trend, GGA believes, feeds the perception of critics who see the media as a surplus of freedom and deficit in responsibility. GGA President Afil Moni is therefore urging media practitioners to endeavor to exercise freedom while upholding responsibility. Stamoni was addressing journalists at an international press center in Accra, where a flag-raising ceremony was held to climax World Press Freedom Day. Rebecca Epper joined the journalists.
Freedom of expression and free press are words that are often bandied about within media circles. Yet, journalists forget that on the threshold of freedom transcends responsibility. Ghana's media body, the Ghana Journalists Association, is not too happy about some of the excesses within the Ghanaian media terrain. President of the GJA, Afil Moni, said World Press Freedom Day should serve as a reminder to all journalists to uphold freedom of expression and be responsible.
The ease and the speech with which people ventilate their concerns and articulate their views on a numerous media platforms are indeed unprecedented in the history of Ghana. However, like many media watchers and media consumers, the GGA is overly worried about the blatant disregard for ethical values in sections of the media. This trend feeds the perception of certain critics who see the Ghana media as that of surplus of freedom and deficits in responsibility. The GGA, however, sees nothing surplus about our freedom, but urges all media practitioners to exercise freedom and actualize responsibility.
The GJA believes that the passage of the Right to Information and Broadcasting Bills into law will go a long way to bring sanity into the media landscape. Partners of the media industry believe that in spite of some excesses, the media needs commendation for contributing to consolidate Ghana's democracy. This formed the cracks of messages delivered at the event at the International Press Center in Accra. GBC's Director General Major Albert John Chibi commended all journalists for their work and says GBC will continue to play its role by focusing on critical national issues.
GBC is approaching the digital age with enthusiasm, excitement, and some measured euphoria, because the opportunities present in digital broadcasting are mind-boggling. Digital broadcasting will allow GBC to diversify its operations from the one analog channel. We have grown to 6 digital channels and we intend to grow even further.
World Press Freedom Day 2015 is themed Let Journalism Thrive.
Rebecca Ekpe. Government is worried about how uncertified social media messages are published and broadcast by media houses. The Minister of Communications, Dr. Edward Omane-Boama, is of the view that when uncertified information goes out in the media without any factual verification, it can negatively affect security and undermine social and national cohesion and integrity. He said government will do all it can to ensure sanity within Ghana's cyberspace. The Communications Minister was speaking at the flag-raising ceremony in Accra to mark World Press Freedom Day.
Oftentimes, there have been discrepancies in the work of the media in terms of people's right to true information and their responsibility to be fair and factual. I'm referring especially to the speed with which people, such as citizen journalists, put out information on social media without caring to cross-check their facts and figures. I'm also referring to the indecent ways with which reputable media houses, traditional or conventional, pick such information and publish them as a gospel truth without cross-checking. By engaging in such practices, you need to ask yourselves whether you end up crucifying the principles of sound journalism, ethics and law, or you advance the frontiers of this noble profession. Through multi-stakeholderism in internet governance, we shall implement appropriate measures to bring rights and responsibilities within Ghana's cyberspace into alignment.
Communications Minister Dr. Edward Omane-Boamah. The collection of TV license fees is likely to come into force at the close of this year. The Minister of Communications, Dr. Omane-Boamah, says the TV license fees will be equitably distributed among the state broadcaster GBC, the Ghana Independent Broadcasters Association, GIBA, National Media Commission, and other partners. The minister made the announcement when he spoke to journalists in Accra.
This year, we shall endeavor to ensure that proceeds from the TV license fees will be equitably distributed among the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation, the National Media Commission, and the Ghana Independent Broadcasters Association. Cabinet has also decided that the film industry benefits from the TV license fee because in a digital world, content is as good as the numerous broadcasting houses that will proliferate once we migrate from analog television broadcasting to digital by February 2016.
Dr. Omane-Boamah is the Minister of Communications. Meanwhile, the Director General of GBC, Major Albert Donchebe, has welcomed the announcement that the Minister of Communications is the GBC, on the other hand, will put appropriate measures in place to reinforce government's efforts to make the payment of the TV license fee a reality.
Very, very positive. Very positive. And we believe that there is enough in the port to share with our partners. And we can see that the TV license is the way forward for the development and growth of the broadcasting industry. And so together we intend to make it a tool for accelerated development, especially in the digital age, which is just beckoning. We believe that this is the kind of new investment that we would require to be able to meet the challenges of digital broadcasting, which requires a lot of content. For us to be able to address the content requirements of digital broadcasting, we need to bring on board huge amounts of money. And luckily, the government has listened, the parliament has facilitated a revision of a TV license, and we are going to go to the country very soon, make the announcement, and also lay out the modalities of how the new license fee, which will make public very soon, will be collected.
Major Albert Donchebe is the Director General of GBC. The National Union of Ghana Students, NUGSA, has been compelled to postpone its planned demonstration to Monday, the 11th of this month. The students had planned to hit the streets of Accra on Friday, but after a series of marathon meetings with the Accra Regional Police Command, the two sides have agreed on Monday. The students were earlier insisting on going ahead with the demonstration this week, arguing that next week may not be convenient for them since most of the students will be on vacation or writing exams and will make it difficult for the leaders to mobilize enough members for the demonstration. A statement issued by the General Secretary of NUGS, Idi Muhaidin, said the starting point of the demonstration is Obraspot at Kwame Nkrumah Circle through to Farisco traffic lights, then to TUC and through Accra Polytechnic to Kwame Nkrumah Mausoleum, and finally converge on Hart's Park, where the leaders would address them before presenting a petition to the presidency. The students are staging a demonstration dubbed Yintia to protest the proposed payment of utility tariffs by them. The students say, although they have been assured verbally by the education minister and the deputy chief of staff that they will not pay bills, there are moves by their vice chancellors to bill them for water and electricity consumption. The Ashanti Regional Director of the Ghana Education Service, Savo Kantanka, has instituted swift investigations into the death of a second-year student of the Fijasi Senior High School. Master Beniza Kusi, 18, died at the Fijasi Government Hospital after allegedly inflicting cutlass wounds on himself. Confirming the incident, the Fijasi District Police Crime Officer, ASP Opoku Yamua, said that the body of the deceased has been deposited at the Fijasi Government Hospital for autopsy. According to sources at the school, Ebenezer and his colleagues were reading portions of the school as punishment for infringements of school rules and regulations. The source said the students spotted a rodent, and in the process, all of them abandoned the weeding and pursued the animal with their cutlasses. Ebenezer, who was in the forefront of those chasing the rodent, lifted his sharp cutlass to kill the animal. The source said he fell and they all thought he had killed the animal and started commending him. However, unknown to them, Ebenezer had missed the target and opened a deep wound on his right thigh. This was realized when they got close and saw blood oozing out of his thigh and rushed him to the Fijasi Government Hospital, but overpowered Hamza. His accomplice, however, escaped but was later found. No, I beg your pardon. Government Hospital, where he was sent to, he died minutes later. A juvenile, Hamza Rashid, who was accused of robbery, has been discharged by an Accra Circuit Court after the state failed to begin prosecution 6 months after his arrest. According to the judge, Francis Obri, he took the decision because the juvenile law states that juveniles should be discharged 6 months following their arrest if trial is not started. The prosecutor, DSP Ernest Echampong, however, told the court that the docket has been forwarded to the Attorney General's office and is awaiting advice before commencing trial. According to the facts of the case, on the 8th of last August, at about 10 p.m., the complainant was standing by the roadside about to pick a vehicle when Hamza and his accomplice, now deceased, suddenly pulled over on an unregistered motorbike. They pulled out a cutlass and ordered the complainant to surrender her bag. The complainant obliged and handed over her bag containing two mobile phones, student ID cards, voters ID card, books and 10 CDs, cash to Hamza and his accomplice, who sped off. Thereafter, the two went to Roman Ridge in Accra, and while opening the bag to check the contents, they spotted a police patrol team. On seeing the police, they abandoned the motorbike and took to their heels, firing at the police. The police returned fire and eventually overpowered Hamza. His accomplice, however, escaped but was found later dead. Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire have moved a step closer at promoting trade and reducing transport costs among them. This follows the first of several engagements on the construction of a joint border post at Elubo and Noi. The joint border posts are being introduced in many parts of Africa to address delays on major transport corridors. Minister of Roads and Highways, Alhaji Nusa Fosseini, who led the Ghanaian delegation to Cote d'Ivoire, is hopeful that crossing times at the borders will reduce drastically when the joint border posts are established.
The integration process, once upon a time, involved the building of joint border posts to make movement of people and goods and services easy. The next step in Europe was to demolish even the joint border posts so that people can pass freely. What we are doing now is the first major step in ensuring that we reduce travel time and reduce costs, transportation costs. When we are finally used to that, and when we can guarantee our own security in ways that would not require people stationed at the borders or a minimum amount of people stationed at the borders, we will move to that stage. It's a country-oriented mission. It's not the individual head of state's commitment. It's the country's commitment. So the countries in ECOWAS have committed themselves to this project, because we see the tremendous benefit that comes with it. And so, I said the case of, for instance, Nigeria, there's an election. Not like Jonathan has lost the election, but Nigeria is still committed.
That was the Minister of Roads and Highways, Alhaji Nusa Fosseini. Two UN peacekeepers from Tanzania have been killed with 13 wounded and four others missing in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo when their patrol vehicle was ambushed by suspected Ugandan Islamist rebels. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned the attack on the peacekeepers. He said that it's unfortunate that peacekeepers who were protecting civilians should come under such attack. Yemeni rebels have fired rockets and mortars into Saudi Arabia, killing at least two civilians and reportedly capturing five soldiers. Saudi authorities say armed Houthi fighters carried out the attacks in the town of Najran, forcing the authorities to suspend all flights at a local airport and shut down all schools. In a statement, Saudi military commander Brigadier General Ahmed Asiri said the coalition forces will continue to respond to Houthi attacks, adding that all options are open to the kingdom to ensure its security. Now to end the news, another look at our headlines. 12 banks have decided to withdraw their letters of credit to bulk oil distribution companies. Actress Yvonne Nelson is to lead a vigil against energy crisis on the 16th of May, and the U.S. has announced $20 million offer for information leading to arrest of four IS militants. And that ends the news with Abraham Donko in Accra.